As well, hope everyone is dealing with all the shit that we're going through in 2020. It's been a fucked up year, but nonetheless, let's make it a good one. Let's make it a good week, and I hope this bring some enjoyment and some smiles and some happiness to your everyday life. Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby today is presented with my partners, my two partners, Coolbet. I love to gamble. Absolutely love to gamble. So why not have the most transparent sportsbook involved? Right now, for me, it's only been UFC, a little bit of golf for some charity matches. But if you're going to bet, and when you do bet, go to coolbet.com. Absolutely love these guys. Very transparent, very easy to cash out when need be. Not like a lot of other sportsbook out there. Also, a new partner and an absolutely unbelievable Canadian company from Saskatchewan, Player Golf, PLYRGolf.com. Go there. I love the golf. I play every single day, or at least I try to when the golf widow lets me. PlayerGolf.com. Unbelievable stuff, unbelievable company, unbelievable people, and that's what we do. We partner with the best. So go to Player Golf and CoolBet.com for all your needs in those areas. My guest today,
Cam Ward and Tim Gleason, also their partner, Jason Ernest.
Welcome to Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby. How are you today?
Awesome.
We're good, man. Thanks for having us on.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome. With no hockey, and I'm not going to say nothing to talk about because there's lots to talk about with everything going on in the world today. I don't even want to talk about it because it's been a crazy few days. You guys are in the United States, a little bit less in Canada. Tough world we live in, but I like to give it a little bit of levity and give people something all else to maybe listen to, and instead of just turning on the news and seeing what we see every single day. So welcome to the show. I want to get right into your careers, starting with you, Cam. You came out of the Western Hockey League, made a splash right away in your rookie year. Take me back to just those feelings coming out of junior. And then, you know, you were a first rounder, so you were highly touted coming into the league, but making that transition from the WHL right into the National Hockey League.
Yeah, I mean, I really lucked out. I lived in Sherwood Park, Alberta, just outside of Edmonton. So being able to be drafted by the Red Deer Rebels an hour and a half down the road, same province, it could have worked out any better for myself. And the year I got drafted in the Bantam draft to Red Deer, they had just lost in the Memorial Cup. I was coming into a really good team, a really good organization led by Brent Sutter, and was really impactful for me and my career, and a big reason why I was able to get drafted in the first round to Carolina. They gave me the opportunity to really showcase my talents, and I know when I first got there, I didn't make my 16-year-old year. So I started my 17-year-old year, which ended up being my draft year. And it wouldn't have been possible if they didn't trade their number one goaltender to really let me showcase my talents and play more games and get the eyes of the scouts. And just really fortunate and blessed to be able to get drafted in the first round to Carolina, and went from there.
I coached my son growing up. I'm an analyst on various platforms now. And I always say, don't ask me about goalies. I really like them when they stop the puck, and I don't like them when they don't stop the puck. I don't try to bring more to the table than that in analyzing goaltenders. What's the difference for a goaltender in making that transition from junior hockey to the pro ranks? Because we know they shoot the puck harder, but there's right. so much more that goes into it. What were the differences for you making that transition from junior to the NHL?
Well, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the mentality. You know, it's it kind of takes a special mentality to be a goaltender, to want to be able to stand in front of that puck and try to stop it. But making that transition to the NHL, it was really about my positioning, being able to read and react to players and anticipate, not just see the initial shot, but knowing what's going on around you, just being able to have a visualization of what's going to happen and taking that next step. I know I'd had a ton of help throughout my junior career. I saw a guy named Ian Clark, who I went down to the summer at Vancouver. He really took my game to another level positioning wise. Because once you get to the NHL, there's times when you don't even see that puck. You just rely on good positioning and being able to get hit by it. And I can remember my first exhibition game. We were playing in Atlanta, and one of the guys was Danny Heatley, came right down. And off wing, much what like Ovechkin would do in today's game, shot right through our D-man's legs. And I kid you not, I didn't even know it hit me. Like literally, and that's where I put myself in the best position to get hit by the puck. And sometimes you got to do that, because guys can fire the puck nowadays, especially, and everybody throughout the lineup, from line one to four, everybody can shoot the puck now.
Well, like all the goaltenders that played with me, you could see my puck very well. You could see the logo, the NHL logo, just fold up beautifully as it rolled through. Timmy, you were a first rounder as well. You had a different path to the NHL. I remember Kevin Adams when I was probably in year three. He was a first rounder to the Boston Bruins, didn't sign with them, ended up going a different route and signing with a different team. You had the same thing, drafted by Ottawa and not being able to come to terms. I don't know how a first rounder doesn't come to terms with the team. It should be pretty laid out simple from the team's point of view. You drafted him, signed the damn guy and get him into the lineup. You took a different route. Explain it.
Yeah, again, drafted to Ottawa in 01. It was almost, a 2-year period to sign. And from just coming, I guess, looking back, I think it was a money thing at that point. I didn't care where I played, but I think it ended up coming down to money, to be honest. And then that didn't work out. Got traded to L.A. For Brian Smolinski. So I went to L.A., played there for a couple of years, But I started out in Windsor for about 4 years and got drafted out of there. So that's how it started.
Too bad you didn't get to play with Smokey, because he's a beauty. He's a beauty. You got to play in L.A. You got to play in Carolina. You got to play in Toronto. You got to play in some great markets, some great warm-weathered markets. What's the difference in, playing in L.A., in Carolina, going to a hotbed like Toronto, even though it was for a short period of time, but just explain the different markets and how you enjoyed both.
Well, LA for one was something. I was originally from Michigan originally, so it is a little bit different out west there. A little bit more relaxed, unless you're talking about the traffic. I loved it out there at that point in time. I was 20 to 22 years old, 23 years old, so I loved it at that time. The hockey, I think, was just kind of, it was starting to explode a little bit. You can see, a lot more fans in the area. There's billboards and things like that. And, you think LA, you don't necessarily think of hockey at that time, but it obviously has exploded since they won the Cup especially. So, and then I got treated with Eric Bélanger, not sure what year it was, maybe 06, I believe. And we flew in, and the first day of the rink, we had at the time down here in Raleigh, it was farm fields on both sides, and now it's all built up. But at the time, we're like, holy shit, where are we going? You fly in, you go to the hotel, and you're like, oh, nice area, whatever. But right off the bat, we're like, holy cow, this is a different place. So, and then, I got an opportunity to go to Toronto. Again, growing up in Detroit, it was, you watch Hockey Night in Canada my whole life. And that was a great experience. And actually, to this day, my dad's like, I asked him, hey, what did you like so much? He's like, honestly, when he played in Toronto, because he got to come on the weekends after work, and he stayed for 3 or 4 days, and he loved it. So from a family perspective, it worked out because a lot of family could come visit and watch and things like that. But then, you know, then I had an opportunity to play in Washington, which was a great hockey market. So that's obviously a great place to play as well.
Yeah, I remember the first time I flew into Raleigh to play, and I'm looking around the rink. There's absolutely nothing. Trees, and more trees. And as we know, and for people that are listening out there, you always have to stay at a 4.5-star or more better hotel in the National Hockey League. I think at the time when the rink was built or when we came in, 4.5 stars was like a Holiday Inn Express. I was like, where the fuck am I? I came back and played golf, and it was unbelievable. Fell in love with the people there and the golf and everything around it. Cam, I wanted to ask you about that magical season. You look back, goaltenders that win the Stanley Cup, Conn Smythe in their rookie year. It was a magical ending to a great start to your career.
Yeah, I mean it's the old cliche, but I mean, I was living the dream, literally. You know, just to be able to make that transition, like we talked about, to my first year in the NHL, I backed up Martin Gerber, who actually had he had a fantastic regular season. I think won maybe 38, 39 games throughout the regular season. And, you know, he got a little sick here in the first round against Montreal when we went to the playoffs. And, you know, at that time, I was just, you know, like any second goalie, you're just always kind of ready for that opportunity if it ever comes up. And when the opportunity arised, you know, quickly in that playoffs, I just remember being like, man, I got to take advantage of this and just roll with it. At that time in my rookie year, I don't think anything was really expected of myself. I wasn't, you know, a lot of people didn't expect me to just top in and be able to go on the run that we ended up going on. But I remember when Coach Laviolette came up to me before game 3 in Montreal and told me right before we went up the elevator that I was going to be starting game 3. And, you know, he asked me if I was ready, and I was like, man, I've been waiting my whole life. At that time, it was 22 years to have this opportunity. And I'll never forget the, you know, going out for warmups at the Bell Center. I mean, it's giving me goosebumps just even talking about it right now. I mean, I go out to center ice, do my stretch and do my thing. And I literally just took a second, and you stare up to the crowd, and you know how it is. Just the atmosphere is unbelievable. And I was like, no matter what happens today, no matter what happens, I'm going to enjoy the moment and take advantage of it. And today, that still marks one of my most favorite games. It was game 3 against Montreal in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
We as players, we deal with nerves. We get a little butterflies in our stomach. And I think it's easier for a player to go out there and, me and Timmy played a similar style. He was a defenseman. But we can get a hit in early. We can get physically involved in the game. We're also not the last line of defense. I'm the first line, so if I make a mistake, it's on Timmy's fault. And if he makes a mistake, it's on you. How do you deal with those nerves as you prepare? I know you've done it your whole life, but now you're on the biggest stage as a young player. How were those nerves when you went in? How long did it take to settle into that game and say, okay, it's just another hockey game, essentially?
Well, I mean, when you say that, it's literally why I chose to be a goaltender, really. I mean, just because I wanted that role. I wanted to be the guy that you can make that big save and be the last line of defense and cover for something. And especially when you go on the road and you have that ability to quiet the crowd, like in Montreal, like we did. But essentially, that's why I got into being a goaltender. And I admit that at that time I was young, so I've been kind of oblivious to the pressure. I think I had a tougher time dealing with the pressure as my career went along, because a lot of that expectations became, now you got to bring it like that, what that magical run year by year. And that's the standard. And that's a good thing, but it's at that time, I had butterflies, but it was a way that I was like, yes, this is my time, and I'm going to go out there and kill it. And, you know, just fortunate to be a part of a really good team led by veteran players like, you know, Rod Brind'Amour, you know, Brett Hedekin, Glenn Wesley. You can go down the list, Ray Whitney. So, I mean, I didn't have to be outstanding. I could just go out there and do my thing. And just as long as you give your team a chance to win, that's what the goaltender is supposed to do. And, you know, going through that run and dealing with New Jersey, I got the second round was against Martin Brodeur. I grew up idolizing Martin Brodeur, you know, as a kid, and being able to play against him. I mean, you pinch yourself just doing that. Then we got to play Buffalo, another hostile environment down there. And then being able to play against Edmonton. I mean, I grew up watching the Edmonton Oilers. That's where my family's from. I can remember watching Curtis Joseph and those series against Dallas and all that stuff. And, you know, you couldn't, I guess at that time, you couldn't write a better storybook. And I was just kind of living the dream, like I said, and fortunate that things went my way.
The Buffalo series, I wasn't a part of it. I had already been traded in 99, and I prayed that they didn't beat Dallas because I asked to get traded, and then they lose to Dallas in the finals. My good friend Jay McKee couldn't play in that game 7 that you played against in Buffalo because he actually almost lost his leg in the series because of a cut that opened up, and literally they said if the swelling went beyond his knee that they were going to have to cut his leg. So didn't win the Stanley Cup, didn't beat you guys, but he got to keep his leg. So I think he's still pretty happy. Now he has a wedding ring that he gets to look at every day. Timmy, I've been beat up by a lot of guys, so I don't know if this is good or great for you or just another day. Fought you in LA. You're a tough, I always said, anyone asked me, I said, strong as an ox. You're one of those guys that I think flies under the radar, but you can always depend on you for everything, the toughness that you need, the leadership, your role. How did you go into every game just knowing that, you know, you're guy that's going to add that leadership and that toughness to a team, and to bring it every night, then knowing that you might get challenged, you might not get challenged, but just your approach to every game?
Well, I, again, starting out, I think it was 20 years old, so I didn't know what to expect. And actually, come out of junior, I didn't necessarily know how to fight. I got beat up a lot, so maybe that's how I learned. And I think maybe a year or two into it, I kind of started figuring it out. I guess, long story short, is every night you kind of, like, I was with LA for a couple of years. We had a couple of tough guys there, so it wasn't necessarily I had to do that myself. And then I got traded to Carolina. It was kind of a different ball game. And it was one of those things I started doing it. And, you know, it was one of those things that, like, hey, if I do this, you know, obviously tries to keep you in the lineup or whatever it was at the time, you did what you had to. And it kind of just snowballed, you know, it's like you would know it just keep coming. So whoever it is, there's always someone else. I can't sit here and say I absolutely love to fight, but at the time it's a big high. And, you know, I took pride in, like, you know, I didn't think of myself as a tough guy. I didn't like to be pushed around, whether it be me, you, or anybody else. If I was out there, I would be a headie type of thing. That was my mentality. Maybe it came from my uncles, my dad were kind of, they all play together and they always stuck up for each other. So maybe that's where it came from. But, I just kind of went into every game. Like, some games were like, if you play Boston Bruins, they had Strom Thornton, Chara, Lucic. I mean, Nate Horton was pretty tough too. It was just, I was like, oh shit, you know, like, it's, you know, it's just a long night. And sometimes it gets away from your own game because you're like, oh, geez, okay, if I do this and I got to handle this guy, you know the deal. So that's kind of how it was. And, but, you know, I just tried to play as hard as I could every night and be physical and kind of in your face type of person.
I was a real late bloomer. I was really small growing up, and even until like 15, 16, didn't make my Bannerman midget teams. It wasn't until like 18, halfway through the year, where I was like playing junior, maybe I can make a career out of this. Just maybe. At 19, I was like, okay, I see some guys. I've been to a training camp. I think I can make a career. I talked to Cam Jansen. I think you play with Cam in junior in Windsor. Tough motherfucker. Crazy as all shit. I love the guy, but he's crazy as all shit. I was like, when did you think you could make it? He was like, 13, 14. I was like, it caught me off guard, but he was bigger, stronger. The question for both of you is, starting with you, Timmy, when did you realize maybe I can play in the National Hockey League, maybe I can make a career out of this?
Well, the first couple of years, it was kind of like, it was a whirlwind the first couple of years, even in my first year in Carolina. You're just like, you did whatever you could to stay in it, to stay in the lineup every night. And, I think after maybe my first, second year in Carolina, I just kind of figured out, like, you know, you're starting to play more minutes, you're relied on, you're on the first penalty kill unit, you're playing 20-plus minutes, certain things like that. So, that's my take on it. But I got to say, before you go on, when I did fight you, you're actually the only person that's ever talked the whole fight, ever. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting.
I'm
good way to go about it. Makes you think.
Yeah, I'm trying to take it away that I'm getting punched. If I laugh enough, I'm like, oh, maybe they'll just remember the laughs and not the punches. So if I would have fought Cam, I would have lost that one too. Cam, when did you realize you could make a career out of it? Although I am one, actually, I'm 2-0 against goalies. I beat up Sean Burke and
beat up Garth. I remember watching those. Yeah, I mean, for me, it takes me back to the junior, really. I mean, my draft year, like I said, I didn't make the Rebels on my 16-year-old year because they kind of had a logjam in net. But so I went back to play midget, and Sherwood Park was a great place for minor hockey to be able to play. And you go into the arena down there, and there's a lot of names on that wall, even two that have made it to the NHL. I would say my draft year at 17, just gained the opportunity, getting scouted, knowing that I had a good chance of going. I thought I was going to go maybe in the top three rounds. I would never expected to be a first rounder. It brings you back to your rookie year and just taking advantage of the opportunities, knowing that when you get those opportunities, you might not be getting too many of them. So when you do get them, you got to take advantage of them. And it's turned out to, for me, led by that, it turned out to be a 14-year career that very lucky for.
What's your take? Because we see that goaltenders now, we've seen goaltenders get taken high, and Carey Price was taken really high. You were a first rounder. DiPietro, obviously, we know where he went. But GMs are always a little hesitant to take a goaltender in the first round because most time goaltenders don't develop for 5 years or 4 years after they draft them. And it might not even be their goaltender that they're drafting them for. We have a Askarov in that's rated between 7 and 12, wherever it may be. If you were a GM, what would your take be on drafting a goaltender early? Would you have to be secure to where you are? And what's a time frame for like development for your point of view in looking at goaltenders coming in?
I mean, that's really tough. I mean, when you say like, the cliche is that, it takes like 5 years to develop and stuff like that. I never really understood that. Once you got drafted, I lucked out too, because when I got drafted, it was the lockout year. So I actually had to go, I played a year in Lowell, Massachusetts in the American Hockey League. And that league was amazing that year because of the lockout. There's a lot of NHL players in there. And I used that as a good stepping stone for, making it a little bit easier of a jump to go to the NHL after the eight, that season in Lowell. But I mean, I feel like my best years were those years from the 20 to 30, really. It's hard for me to understand. And it's hard probably for many people, like you said, with GMs, knowing how long it's going to take for a goaltender to develop. But I think as you see through the league now, it's a young man's game now. It's, everybody's talking like 30 is the new 40. So it's like you're seeing how different goaltenders are developing at a young age. Back then, I didn't do a whole lot of goalie schools until a little bit later on when I got closer to junior, where now they're doing it when they're 12, 11, 12 years old. And just the training, the development is much different now. So I actually think that a goaltender at draft doesn't need as much time as maybe as people think.
So I'm 47, take off 10, I'm 37. Thank you. I appreciate it. I don't have to color my hair as much now. Timmy, toughest player you ever played against, not physically, from a defensive point, defending. There's so many great guys, and it's only getting better now with the skill level of these guys, but toughest guy to defend coming down either one-on-one or just creating space for himself.
I mean, I think Malkin, I go back to 09 when we played him in the playoffs, he was an animal. I know he had Crosby there, but for some reason, at that point in time, he was a beast. He was doing everything, and it was something I'll never forget how dominant he was. And they beat us that year. But I would say him at that point in time, and obviously Ovechkin is interesting because Ovechkin I played against for years. I learned to play against him, like just learned how he did his thing and how he wound up, got tons of speed and all that thing. But I had an opportunity to play with him, which was something that it was like you don't see him a lot of the night, and all of a sudden, bink, it's in the net. So, Malkin. Yeah.
That
was me.
That goes back to like, you know, you got the forwards that got beat and the D get beat, and I'm lucky you better save that thing. So,
yeah. Sometimes.
Same question to you, just a different scale. Toughest guy to have come down, whether it's a slapper, a clapper, a deceptive shot, anywhere in between?
Well, I mean, everybody talks about, Ovechkin. I think that's the obvious choice. But, a lot of the Russians, just even with the curve, I mean, it's just like it's so hard to read off the blade. You talk to, like Kovalchuk back in his day. Same thing with, similar with Malkin and Crosby. But back then when we went to go play Washington, it was actually more about Semin. He scored on me more than Ovechkin. He was kind of the guy that was our Achilles. But, I think of, Shea Weber. I mean, and also, like, I can – brings me back to playing against Montreal. Like, an old guy would have been Sheldon Surrey had a bomb too.
Yeah.
I remember him getting me right between the eyes and literally the cage just stopped right before my nose. And, like I said, the guys can really zip the puck nowadays. And, it makes things obviously a lot more difficult.
If Semin didn't tear his cartilage, he would have been a hell of a fucking player. Man, would he have been good. If he ever decided he wanted to play hockey, man, would he have been good. Guys, I'm going to bring in your business partner, Jason Ernest. Welcome, Jason Ernest. First, I want to, guys, I don't know whose idea it was, how this started, but I'm going to start with you, Jason. How did this evolve, Vineyard 36?
Yeah, so I had a previous winery in Napa Valley called Tobacco Road. I had a wine dinner in Raleigh, and Cam was at that dinner, and someone introduced us to us. And obviously, with his passion for wine and mine as well, I mean, we had a natural friendship that started to build. I sold that business and moved to New York, and we kept in touch. So when he'd come play the Islanders, the Rangers, we'd, go out to a nice dinner, of course, have a glass or two, and the conversation didn't take many trips for the conversation to quickly turn to, what will we do to start our own? So
I haven't tried the wine yet. I'm really excited. I love the logo, love the website. Unbelievably done. Tell me the truth, guys. Is it really in Napa Valley, or is this like a hangover thing where you say you're going to Napa Valley, but it's really in Las Vegas? Oh, road trip! Take it off!
Vegas! Vegas, baby! Vegas! I mean, I don't have any problem going to Vegas, but it's in Napa Valley.
It's in Napa. Guys, what made you, obviously your love for wine has to be one. How did you guys partner with Jason after, and how did you bring Timmy in to the fold?
Yeah, so I think, Jason kind of hit the point there with the time that we met. But really, I mean, my passion for wine kind of started to evolve being around the veteran guys on the road. Being able to travel and fine dine, and for that, the guy for me was Ray Whitney back in the day. It was, he was the guy that every time we went to a restaurant, the guys would just automatically hand him the wine list, and he would go down the list, make the list, make his choice, and it just really kind of piqued my interest. And he had a big cellar, so I found, like, I had a passion for it and found out what I liked. Basically, you know, after trying numerous wines, but you find the varietals that you like and the style that you like. And for me, it was Napa Valley Cabernet. And so quickly, I became a collector. And then eventually, that's where being a collector led me to these wine dinners where I did meet Jason with his previous winery and hit it off. And we always kind of, it was a few years there that we were, when we met, the idea was always there to, if we were going to try it. And I think, you know, when we decided that we would like to do it, I knew I wanted to bring in somebody else. And for me, it was a no-brainer. I wanted to bring in one of my best buddies in Tim Gleason. And so essentially that's what kind of formed the Vineyard 36 with, you know, the two numbers combined. And it seems only fitting that you would try our wine knowing your number. So we look forward to giving you some too.
Yeah, I can't wait to taste it. Timmy, what have you learned most? I love reds. I'm not a big white wine drinker. I'm getting a little bit more into it as the summer comes. I love my cabs. I love Pinots, but I'm more of a cab guy. What have you learned most about it? Because it's a very, very big process in bringing the grapes to life, as you guys know.
Well, it's a huge process. We've had some opportunities to go out there and when we can all get together and kind of see how it all works out in the last, you know, almost 10 years now. So that's a whole nother conversation in itself, just to see how things operate and see how it's put together and end up in a bottle. So, but it's one of those things that's ever evolving. Wines, like, I'm not so much a collector, but I got two fridges in here that are constantly stocked, and I just kind of pick away at it as I go. So I like what I like. I'm a cab guy too. That's how I started myself. But it's one of those things that you just constantly learn something about, whether it's, you know, like for a while I had the hardest time tasting and smelling things, and sometimes I still struggle with it. My wife's like, hey, there's a blueberry in this. You're like, oh yeah, okay. But, you know, sometimes I have a hard time with that. And like, even when you go to tastings, you're like, oh shit, I gotta taste these. Sometimes I'm not too good at it because I have a hard time tasting and smelling. But if you say there's vanilla, you're like, yep, oh yeah, I taste it. So I think it's one of those things, you're just always kind of listening, reading, and, you know, you're talking to the people around wine, and you can constantly learn from these people. So you know, I can't put my finger on one thing that I've learned, but there's tons of things you can talk about and you know, kind of make a story out of it. But it's definitely something that's ever evolving, and I obviously enjoy being part of it.
Jason, take us from the start. How long did it start? Once you guys decided, okay, this is what we're going to do, this is our name, this is where we're going to go, how long from start to finish to get your first bottles out for production?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, you know, these guys first wanting to put their toe in the water, so to speak, you know, it was like, let's take this thing slow. Let's go through the process. Let's see where we get the grapes. Let's design a label. Let's go start to finish. So we literally, the three of us and a few other guys split a few barrels, and we went through the process. And they had a game, the guys had a game down in Florida to play the Panthers. And during that whole process, it just so worked out from a timing perspective that I was able, the wines were finished, and I was able to ship them down to Fort Lauderdale. And my dad has a place down there and keeps a boat there. So we went on the boat, got out in the intercoastal, and popped those bottles for the first time. And, you know, I always remember the story of looking over at Tim, and, you know, he's a pretty scary guy sometimes, but he had a big smile on his face, and he said, I guess we're going to do this. So that was like the, you know, the first phase of it, I would say. And from where that started to where we're at now, you know, we've built the business the right way. We've, you know, tried to go after some of the best fruit in the world. And you can't just go out and do that overnight. And so We've developed relationships over the last several years with some great vineyards, but the last 3 years is really the start of this whole project for us. So it's crazy to think, but wine isn't like any other business. Not like a t-shirt business where we sell a bunch of t-shirts, we just print some more. You know, it's a living, breathing thing. We buy fruit. That fruit turns into however much, you know, juice, and that's how much we can sell for until 2 years later. So this release that we just released on Monday is the culmination of all 10 of those years of taking those baby steps. So
we've all gotten nervous in playing the game. I asked Cam that earlier. Anytime we play our first game, you have those butterflies. How are the nerves when you open it up and it's ready and you're like, okay, this is kind of, we're here. It better be damn good.
Well, Cam's notorious for having the patience of a 5-year-old. So, we wait 2 years for this wine, and then it's like we're ready to drink it immediately. And and once wine is bottled, it really is supposed to sit for 3 to 6 months to let the wine settle in a glass. So it's like we've waited 2 years. But, I mean, obviously, as soon as those bottles, a cork is put in them, we ship them to ourselves and crack them right open. And, yeah, those nerves are running high and everybody's anxious. And, and when you pop that cork and you, the smell from the first time, you can already tell if it's going to be good. And it's funny because you always say, like, if. We know that the wine, we've done, just like you guys playing your sport, you've trained. You've put in the hours and hard work. You know that when you get on the ice, you're going to perform. And that's the way we feel about these wines. I mean, we are now sourcing some of the most coveted vineyards in the world. And we're making our wines in a world-class facility with state-of-the-art technology. I mean, everything we're doing and taking the steps is to ensure that those wines are going to, you know, meet our expectations. And we still get nervous just like you. You know, you put in all the hard work and you get out there, and even though you know you can ice skate, so to speak. But
what's the most important part in the process? I know you need everything to go well, and you have to be in line with each other for any business, anything to go well. But in winemaking, is there one thing that's more important, or that it's just essential this has to happen?
So all starts with the fruit. I mean, with a world-class winemaker, world-class facility, all those things, essentially, when we're given the best fruit and the best product, all we have to do is try not to mess it up. That fruit is on its way to being a top performer, so to speak. So it all starts in the vineyard, and, you know, the last, like, 10 years we've been doing this, really the last four, we have been sourcing some of the best fruit in the world. And this year we just signed a new contract with a very prestigious vineyard in Oakville called Oakville Ranch. So again, we're always evolving, always trying to be better, just like a professional athlete.
So anytime we talk cabs and we talk wines in general, Napa Valley is the spot. It's the place. Why is Napa? What is it conducive because of the weather? Is it the soil? Why is Napa the place?
It's a combination of all those factors. And I mean, obviously Napa's a very diverse region with tons of different soils and climates and elevations. And so that's why within Napa Valley itself, there's all the different AVAs or designated areas like, you know, Oakville, Rutherford, Howell Mountain. That's why those wines are all going to taste completely different. The farming techniques, whether they're being organically farmed, it's kind of like building a car. You know, I mean, if you use the best parts, you're going to come out with a great product.
Well, I never promote anything unless I drink 2 barrels of it. So I'll expect the barrels to be on its way. Vineyard 36, the logo is incredible. I can't wait to taste it. Congratulations on your endeavor with 2 great guys. You have 2 unbelievable guys in Cam Ward, in Tim Gleason. I wish them all the success. Thank you guys for joining me on Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby. Jason, nice meeting you. Look forward to tasting it. Look forward to meeting you and look forward to taking a tour of the facilities when I'm out in Napa Valley.
Cheers. Thank you again for having us. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Awesome. You're the man. Good luck. Vineyard 36. Thanks. Go check them out and drink lots of their wine. If you don't, I will. So help me out. Cheers.
I want to thank Cam Ward and Tim Gleason today for coming on the show. Also, their partner, Jason Ernest. Absolutely unbelievable adventure that they have, and wish them all the luck. Unbelievable logo. Can't wait to taste the wine, but thank them. Good luck to them. Unbelievable careers. And Cam Ward, wow, wow. Crazy. Can you imagine a young kid coming into the National Hockey League, being thrust upon in what he was into the NHL playoffs, end up winning a Stanley Cup in your rookie season, Conn Smythe Trophy winner, but two great guys and an unbelievable venture that they are going through. Thanks for listening to Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby. Hope you had a great time listening to those guys. We're going to be back with some great guests next week, some former teammates of mine, also some Hall of Famers, and one crazy motherfucker that's going to be coming on. Thanks to Coolbet, one of my partners, and Player Golf, who are going to be launching very soon the MB36 Golf line. So can't wait till that comes out. Love golf, love to dress well, and love my golf clothes. So PLYRgolf.com. Go shop there. You'll be happy. And Coolbet, we love to gamble. I love to gamble. We've had UFC, a little bit of golf, but everything's coming back. We got hockey coming back. We got basketball coming back. Playoffs? Yeah, we're talking playoffs. We're going to make some bets, and next week I'm going to give you my picks, the best picks for NHL prop bets coming soon. Enjoy, have a great week, and I'll talk to you this week.
The devil you know, the devil you know, the devil you don't. It's better to know the devil you know, the devil you don't. 'Cause wherever you